The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
Well, since its original publication in 1963, A History of Interest Rates has become the Bible and authority on interest rates. It was originally written by Salomon Brothers partner Sidney Homer and has been updated by Richard Silla. He's Professor Emeritus of Economics and former Henry Kaufman Professor of Financial Institutions and Markets at New York's University Stern School of Business. Professor, how would you describe the world that we find ourselves in today? Because when I read your book, you know, it seemed like for a good amount of time, with the exception of maybe during Babylonian times when interest rates were at 20% and a brief period in the late 70s where it got almost up there, but they've sort of varied between 3 to 6% on average, maybe 12% during Roman inflationary periods. But how would you contrast interest rates today, where in parts of the world like Europe and Asia, they're negative?
Well, I think it's unprecedented. We're seeing the lowest interest rates in recorded human history, as you mentioned. By the way, I think that peak wasn't in the late 70s. It was actually 1981 when we had 15% on government bonds and 20% on bank loans. And so that was just almost 40 years ago. I guess it's 39 years ago now that we had about the highest rates in U.S. history. And now, four decades later, we've seen the lowest rates in U.S. history and all around the world. You know, our rates have briefly been negative, but Europe and Japan have seen negative rates for some time now. In fact, there's a huge amount of debt. I've seen estimates of $10 to $15 trillion of debt, and mostly European bonds, probably sovereign bonds, are showing negative rates. So this is really unprecedented. And one of the themes of our book, of course, is that there are cycles of interest rates. They trend down for a while, they trend up for a while. I have to say, we've been trending down for 40 years now, and that's 39 years, and that's kind of at the outside limits of, you know, usually they reverse around, 3 to 4 decades after they've been trending one way. So I'm kind of wondering whether that historical pattern will hold now.
And Professor, is there any linkage between the amount of debt? I mean, if you look at the amount of debt in the, especially now with this coronavirus, the stimulus package, we may have $3 trillion deficits, and the national debt was around $24 trillion. It may be going up to $27 and $30 trillion here in the next couple of years. Is there any relation between interest rates and how high they get or how low they get and the amount of debt in the economy?
Well, I think there is a relationship, obviously, because the government is in there basically borrowing a lot of money to finance its deficits. I think the nearest analogy might be to a wartime. You know, the governments borrow a lot of money in wars, and, you know, people are referring to this coronavirus as placing us into a war. We have a war not with a, I think President Trump says, an invisible enemy, the virus. And I think what's going on now, massive increases in government spending, plus in some sense removing some of our workers from the labor force so they go in the army. I mean, we're doing that in a massive way now when we shut down restaurants and hotels and cruise lines. That's causing a lot of removal of labor from the labor force. And I think one of the lessons of history is that in wartime, these great demands plus production being either altered or moved to other types of activity, one of the results is inflation. I've studied the history of U.S. war. And we had almost a hyperinflation during the American Revolution. We had inflation during the War of 1812. The Civil War, of course, the price level doubled from 1861 to 1864. World War I, the price level doubled. World War II, the price level doubled after the war, you know, when they took the price controls off. And, you know, if we're in a war with the virus now, I think, especially investors, historians, should be thinking about what happens usually when you have a war is that there are inflationary pressures. Now, what is the impact of that on interest rates? Well, I think if prices start to go up, people will want to, who lend money, will want to have some protection for what they lend. And maybe the bond vigilantes, remember them from the 1990s, the bond vigilantes, which controlled what the government.
Yeah, what happened to them?
Well, I think we got rates so low, but the secret was we got inflation down to low levels. You know, the Federal Reserve has been apologizing for not meeting its 2% target. Despite all its efforts, it had trouble getting up to its 2% target. And so I think the bond market vigilantes said, well, you know, the Fed has got a pretty low inflation target and it can't even reach that. So we don't have to worry that much about inflation. And that may, well, that seems to have been true for the last couple of decades, maybe three decades now. So the bond market vigilantes went into hibernation, one might say. But they may come back now that we're actually fighting a war against a virus with massive increases in government spending and taking some of our workers away from their jobs. So most other wars we've had resulted in some inflation. I have a feeling in my bones that we'll see some of that inflationary pressure as well.
Yeah, and especially, you know, right now we've had a disinflationary environment and a deflationary impact as a result of shutting down economies, and especially with energy and this not only destruction in demand as economies contract and as we quarantine, there's less people on planes driving their cars on the road when they're staying at home. But when we come out of this, and then also this tremendous amount of money that's being pumped into the economy, I can't help but see an inflationary impact. I want to talk about something else about interest rates, and that is the impact of these extraordinary low interest rates on people like savers, on institutions like insurance companies that try to earn a rate of return on the float between the money they take in and what they pay out. And then also, for example, pension funds like my own state of California, CalPERS, where their stated return is they need to earn 7.5% to meet their pension obligations.
Well, I think that's going to be a big problem. Those pension funds, you know, they have a kind of funny way of accounting. Some of the regulations allow them to pretend that they earned their 7% return, even if they didn't. But I think you can only go on that way for a little while before reality catches up with you. And obviously, nobody's getting a 7% return unless you go into, you know, very low-rated, high-yield debt. Even there, you know, that getting 7 or 7.5% is difficult. Of course, that's not too far off the long-run rate of return on equities. But now with our elevated levels in the stock market, I think even moving into equities isn't going to save a pension fund that much. And so I think, you know, this is a real problem. You mentioned California and CalPERS. The state of Illinois has tremendous obligations, which are unfunded. And I think it's they're in worse shape than a lot of states. But it's a widespread problem. And you mentioned the insurance companies as well. They're selling annuities. And if you have an annuity at today's interest rates, you have to put up a lot of capital to get a decent amount of income coming from it. So it's a major problem. I think we've suppressed interest rates. You know, I think the main reason for it is the, you know, the dot-com bubble deflated 20 years ago and the Fed moved interest rates down to lower levels from down to 1%. Then we had the financial crisis a decade ago and the Fed moved interest rates down to about zero and followed up with the quantitative easing measures. Now we've got the coronavirus crisis and the Fed has again pushed interest rates down to very low levels. I think that, you know, there are reasons for that, but it has created the problems you said. Anyone that's living on fixed income is having a harder time getting a return. And I don't know when we're going to get back to normal, but I expect we will have to do that one of these days, and maybe things will be a little better then. But in the meantime, the companies you describe and the states and pension funds, they're going to have trouble.
You know, when we take a look at this interest rate environment, and I know this was a policy pursued by the Fed coming out of World War II, they called it financial repression, where they kept the level of interest rates low. And as the economy inflated, those debt levels became less and less in proportion to where the economy was. Do you think we may go through a similar period given the debt levels today and what the Fed may have to do? I mean, if we were to normalize, Professor, and get interest rates back to, let's say, 4 or 5%, That could be a lot of money added to the federal deficit when you're talking about 24 to 30 trillion in debt.
That's certainly true. And those rates you mentioned, they seem sort of, far off in the distant past. But I remember when I was a young man in the late 1950s and 1960s, you would get 4% interest on a government bond, 4.25, 4.5. Of course, rates moved up from there going into the inflation of the 70s. It's going to strain the government's budget. And one of the reasons I worry about inflation, maybe more than most people, is that it would be in the interest of the government having the debt obligations that you're talking about to have some inflation. Remember in the 70s in California, they talked about bracket creep and the people were paying more in taxes because we have a progressive tax system, but they weren't getting gains in real income. They were just having their incomes marked up by inflation. I think we may be in for a period like that again, or at least if you can make analogies with history. There's some chance that we will tolerate inflation because it's actually in the interests of debtors to have inflation. And the government is going to be, or it is now, and is going to be even more so in the future, the biggest debtor of all.
And you just have to look at some of those numbers, and the incentive is there. I want to talk a minute on how this might be impacting what the Fed may be doing, inflation, and also what the government may be doing. And this is this MMT theory, modern monetary theory, that basically says if you can issue debt in your own currency, you don't have to worry about default. And, you can always control inflation through taxation. So there seems to be a justification right now, theoretically, to inflate, to spend as much money, and the Fed just kind of mops it up and monetizes it.
Well, I think that's right. Modern monetary theory is basically money printing. I think they make a valid point. Now that we're not on a gold standard, the Fed is under no obligation to convert its paper promises, our currency, into any hard metal. So freed from that constraint, the Fed does have the sort of powers that modern monetary theory says they have. The question is, what will be the results of these policies of money printing? And the modern monetary theory says, well, you can mop it up with higher taxes. I've lived a long time, and I've seen that when you start talking about raising taxes, especially if you need to do it quickly to stop an inflationary bubble from being created, it doesn't work that way. There'll be a lot of opposition to any tax increases. And so modern monetary theory, I think, is a little bit Goldilocks or Pollyannish when it thinks that it's so easy to stop any inflation through fiscal measures. It's more likely that the inflation will get away from us. And again, I want to reiterate that inflation is in the interests of a lot of people, debtors, for example.
As you look at this, all of it combined, when do you think, Professor, we will see the return of the bond vigilantes? I remember a comment made by a political strategist, James Carnville, and he said, if I could be reborn again, I would come back as a bond vigilante because I can intimidate governments. Do you think we ever see the vigilantes return?
Well, I think we will when inflation begins to heat up. It's not a sure thing, but it's certainly, the war analogy, the price level doubled in most of the wars of U.S. history. Now we're fighting another war against the virus. I think when the inflation heats up, the bond market vigilantes came along in the 1960s and 70s when we had the Vietnam War and Lyndon Johnson's Great Society simultaneously without tax increases, and the Fed printed the money then, and we ended up having just rising inflation levels. I think the average from 1965 to 1981 was about 6% a year. And by 1979, 80, 81, when Mr. Volcker came in and put a stop to it, we had double-digit levels of inflation, 10, 12, 13%. So the bond market vigilantes raised interest rates to very high levels in the 1970s, and I think they were still around in the 1990s when James Carville made that famous quote about how powerful the bond market was. And I think we could see it again. We haven't really thought about it for 30 years now because inflation has been under control and the economy's been doing all right most of the time. But when the inflation heats up, and I think there's a good chance of that you'll see a return. The bond market vigilantes will come out of hibernation like Rip Van Winkle and begin to raise interest rates. The real interest rate may not change, but the nominal interest rate will adjust according to inflation.
How would you, as an investor, be positioning yourself for something like this to return. You have Treasury-protected TIPS, Treasuries. How would you position for something like this? Because certainly the topic you and I are talking about, inflation, is furthest on the minds of the markets right now or investors.
You know, that's right. I mean, I've even heard people say that the effect of this crisis may be deflationary, in the sense that we're shutting down a lot of productive facilities now. And so when we come back on stream, people will be slow to go out and resume their normal ways of shopping, and yet the businesses will be able to make a lot of products. And so some people say the only way they'll be able to move their products will be to cut the prices. I think the consumers will come back as fast as business starts producing again. So I don't really worry about that deflationary aspect of it, but I think we do have to worry about the inflationary aspect of it. We've gotten used to having a low level of inflation. That doesn't mean it can never come back. Before 2007, we hadn't had a major financial crisis since the 1930s, but then we had a major financial crisis. So just because we've gotten used to something for two or three decades doesn't mean that something else might not be right around the corner.
The original book written by Sidney Homer was published in 1963. There's been four editions to the book, the last which you've been participating was 2005. Professor, if you were to do another edition to this book today, would there be anything that you would change or add that was not in the fourth edition?
Well, I think you mentioned TIPS. You know, I happen to think that for people who want to have a portfolio that's balanced with equities and fixed income, TIPS make a lot of sense right now. I mean, I've always thought that a small amount of TIPS belong to the portfolio, just on the outside chance you might have inflation. But I think now that I see it coming, what happened to bonds in the 1970s when we had a lot of inflation, bond values got marked down. Bond prices fell as the yields went up. That's what happened when interest rates rise a lot. The value of bonds goes down. But if that were to happen again, I think, and you want to have some fixed income in the portfolio, I think a much higher proportion of TIPS would make sense going forward.
Well, Professor, I just want to congratulate you. The book, A History of Interest Rates, is still considered the Bible of interest rates. It's a fascinating book, going all the way back to 5,000 years of interest rate history. Really gives you a lot of insight as to what happens. And as you bring up in this discussion, you know, we're at war right now, not war in the traditional sense where you got armies lined across each other from the battlefield with tanks, but it's an invisible war against an invisible enemy. And just like in wartime, the government is ramping up, spending money, and also the Fed is behind it and supporting it, much like they did in World War II. So great insights. Thank you, Professor. You know, I have all three versions of this book.
Ah, I see. Well, you know, Sidney died, I think, sometime around 1980 or so, but the book was still selling. And so in the 1980s, they came to me and said, would you like to revise this? And I had used the book and corresponded with Homer when I was doing my PhD thesis in the 1960s. And so I was happy to take on the task, and it was a lot of fun doing it. And I learned a lot, as you often do. You know, to teach, you have to learn. And you know, I learned a lot by working on history of interest rates.
Well, I'll tell you, it's one of my favorites, one of my classics. I hold this book in regard in the same way that I do Graham and Dodd's Security Analysis. Well, Professor, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the program and bringing us up to date. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Stay safe and come back and talk to us again.
Well, I'd be happy to do that. And thanks a lot for a good interview.
Financial Sense Wealth Management has been named as one of the top investment advisory firms in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Let us put our financial expertise to work for you. Call now at 888-486-3939 or email grow@financialsense.com. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.